You're listening to The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. Doing it over here at your mom's house. I'm Ryan Sickler. You can find me on social media at Ryan Sickler. My website's ryansickler.com. That's where you can go follow me on social media, get my latest album, find my tour dates. Let me hit you with some tour dates we have coming up, because I'm going to be out with Tommy Buns. June 13th, we're in Richmond, Virginia. The 14th of June, Hanover, Maryland. And then the 15th, Atlantic City. And then a couple weeks later, the 27th in Tulsa, Oklahoma. 28th in Wichita, Kansas. And then the 29th and 30th in Kansas City. August 1st through 3rd, I'm at the House of Comedy in Minnesota. And then I think it's September 14th. Let me double check that. I'm in Baltimore. As always, I want to tell you thank you for all the positive feedback. You guys are fucking amazing. Wherever you listen to podcasts, however, just make sure you subscribe to the Honeydew. Download it, review it, and also make sure you're subscribed to the Your Mom's House YouTube channel. All right, that's where you'll get Honeydew episodes every Tuesday. And you can go to thehoneydewpodcast.com to email me and follow the show on social media. All the links are there. And if you are new to this show, what we do here is laugh in the face of adversity. We like to find a little bit of light in the darkness. And as I always say, these are the stories behind the storytellers. And today, my light in the darkness, the story behind the storyteller, Mr. Andrew Santino. Welcome to the Honeydew, brother.
Thanks, brother. What, light in the darkness, is that because of my hair?
I knew you were going to say that.
Is that what it is?
It is.
Did you say that for everybody? Light in the darkness?
I've been starting to frame it up a little bit, you know, to tee it up in case you're new to the show.
Really, really sweet, the light
but,
from the darkness.
But you're the lighter, you're the red.
I'm the lightest lighter in this motherfucker. I'm the lightest of the lighters. This
you
is
are.
It.
How are
I'm
you
the
doing?
Light in the darkness. I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm great. Why don't you please plug, promote, whatever you'd like.
Sure.
Let everybody know where they can find Santino, your podcast,
dates. Go to AndrewSantino.com for all of the appropriate Santino-ness stuff that you need. Show dates. This weekend, I'm in Bridgeport, Connecticut at Stress Factory. The next weekend, I'm at the La Jolla Comedy Store in San Diego. Check all those dates on AndrewSantino.com. Go to Cheeto Santino on Twitter and Instagram. That's where you find my life. Cheeto Santino.
I love the Cheetos.
I should get sponsored
Santino.
By those motherfuckers. I'm either going to get sponsored or sued by Frito-Lay or whoever makes them. At some point, I'm going to have a cease and desist letter. I thought about that. I was like, I wonder if they're ever going to come after me about that shit. And they
if
will.
They have it yet.
People tag me in them all the time. And I'm always like, don't answer. I don't respond to it because I don't want them to
have
see
that. Have they ever responded back?
No, but they got their eye on me. I can tell.
Set that Cheeto on your fucking ass.
Chester's like, what's up, player?
Hey, man. You need to knock that shit off, bro.
Just come smack the shit
there
out of me.
There can only be one of us. First of all, I want to say thank you. And we were outside talking about the comedy community, especially out here on the West Coast. Everybody sort of like a little mafia supporting each other, helping each other out. And I happened to do Rick Bronson's House of Comedy in Phoenix. Great club, great people, by the way.
Great people.
Rick and Tammy. And you hit me up and said, hey, I'm going to leave some weed for you. And I was like, I fucking love you. It had do not touch for Ryan Sickler written on the shit.
because I was like, I'm not going to be able to finish this weed. And I don't know where I was going next. Actually, I think, and it was a pack of joints. What are they called?
Lowell
Farms. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm not going to be able to take this back. I was like, I should just leave. And then I looked on the calendar. If it was anybody else, I probably wouldn't have done it.
I love it, dude.
But I knew you were coming. I was like, hey, man, I left you some weed. So like a mom, like a little sack lunch I wrote for the maid, do not touch for Ryan Sickler only.
Well, I was at their Edmonton club just not long ago, and just so you know, I paid it for it all, so it was a nice nug I couldn't finish, and I left that out for whoever's next.
The community. We should have started. This is like, you know, Oprah like pays people's tolls and all that bullshit.
You're getting weed! You're getting weed!
You're look getting under weed. Your chair! It's a huge bag of weed. Loses it. That's what we should do, though. We should start a community program of comics that has like a, there should be an online shareable Google Doc calendar of where people were and who's leaving behind. Yeah, wouldn't you love that shit?
I'm like, oh, we got some whiskey and tequila in Phoenix. Okay.
Yeah, that would be great. It'd be cool. We'd look forward to it. But yeah, I had to leave you a little something because you gotta have something in the desert, man. It's tough out there sometimes. It's a little boring sometimes. So
well,
I was like,
speaking of tough,
mm-hmm.
that's what we'd like to talk about on this show here. Yeah. I asked you to come, and I always ask everybody what they want to come and talk about. One of the things you said you wanted to talk about was failure, because you've had a lot of failure.
Yeah.
But we were talking before, and you said that you had some health issues. So I want to talk about that, because what you mentioned, I don't even know how to say it.
Let's see if you think you know how to say it.
Prostatitis?
Prostatitis. No, you're
right.
I did get
That's
it. Good. Yeah.
I did.
I wanted you to fuck it up a little bit.
Prostatitis?
Prostatitis. That's a street
That's
name.
How I'm going to keep saying
Hey, man, my boy got prostatitis. Prostatitis.
Got that itis.
Got an itis, man. He got the itis in his booty. Yeah, prostatitis. People, I have chronic prostatitis. It's an inflammation of the prostate gland. The prostate gland, kids, is in your butthole. It's up through your booty, and you got to go to a doctor to get it checked out, and they have to finger you for about a good 2 or 3 minutes.
For real?
It's the most uncomfortable shit. You'll have to go get it done someday. Most men over 55, they ask you to go get a prostate exam once in a while, because prostate cancer is crazy common and bad.
Well, I thought it was at 40, and when I went 40? To my doc, I thought you had to get your prostate checked at 40, and then when I went to my doctor when I was 40 for my physical, I was like, you're not going to check my prostate? He's like, nah, they moved that to 50. He's like, I can check it
they
if you
moved
want.
It?
I was like, I'm good. But 10 years is a long time to wait, you
we
know.
We moved it to 50.
So what happens? Because I had a friend that was having prostate trouble, and this dude, he couldn't even take a leak.
So that's bad.
Is that part of it?
No, that's when it's really bad. Mine was more like, it's like pain and discomfort in your undercarriage, you know, something's wrong underneath the car. Like you can't, between, you know, your nifkin, your grundle, your gooch.
Your taint.
That's weird pressure. Like weird, crazy. I can't describe it other than like, you remember like when you were a kid and you were on like a
like
BMX
you rode your bike all day
and you slammed and you know if you went off a jump and slammed on the seat and it kind of vibrated through your body. It's like that
all the time though. You feel
no,
that?
It comes and it goes. It comes
but you
and it
feel
goes.
That through your body.
Yes, bro.
Fuck.
Sometimes I feel it in my back.
And then you have to have a doctor finger your ass. To make
well, here's
you feel
what,
better?
Well, here's what's up. They take well. That's just for half. That's for fun. Sometimes I just go in. He's like, you don't have any symptoms. I'm like, I don't.
This thing's not swollen at all.
Yeah. Well, oh. Well, you want to make it swollen? Get out. So I had to go in, and this is what's crazy. So that when he's pushing on it inside of you, bro, I was scared I was gonna piss because you feel like you're going. You know when you've held your piss for so long, and the moment it gets, it's like, it's this big relief.
Burns and
it
feels
dude,
good.
He pushed it so hard. I thought I was going to piss all over the table. I got so nervous. Then I was like, I'm going to be embarrassed of the health scare, a guy's finger in my ass, and I'm going to pee all over this room. It's going to be like the worst day of my life. But he's like, you're feeling like you got to pee? Don't worry about it. You're not going to pee. I promise. He's like, just tell me what hurts the most.
I'm hard now.
Yeah.
I'm hard.
So he tells you, you know, you tell him where the most sensitive spot is, and then they give you all these different.
Wait, hold on. You tell him once he's inside, feeling
around.
Yeah,
when he's
inside
like, your
there,
booty.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where you're.
He tells you where it's the most sensitive. You'll tell him where it's the most sensitive, and then they give you different pills. Dude, there's a million different prostate pills to try to reduce inflammation, to get out a bacterial infection. It starts with an infection. Most people get like an infection. They don't know how. There's a million different ways.
When did it start for you?
Three years ago.
Three years ago.
What
did you notice first? Just trouble urinating?
No, it was never. I could never trouble, but like going all the time. And I was
frequent.
Yeah, man. I was like, maybe I'm drinking too much water when I like if I'm running because I run every day. So I was like, maybe I'm just drinking too much water. No, that's not it. And then I changed that up. Still was pissing all the time. And then after you piss, it would feel like you didn't clear. That's what they say. You didn't clear. You know. Like there's something left in the gates.
Yeah.
You know, the bridge is closed, but it's like there's something left behind it. So I'd feel like that all the time, like pressure. And then this weird, like I have to piss again, even though I just pissed, you know? And then like, so you go in there, he gives you all these medications and half of them are placebos. I think like some of them work, some of them don't. They change the color of your piss. One of them made my piss like bright red. It's crazy.
Red?
Yeah. It flushes shit out. It's just trying to flush stuff out. But honestly, man, it fucks with my head. It got me real sad and depressed because I was like, what if I have...
The medication did?
No. Just the anxiety
the
from
prostatitis.
All of it. Yeah, the prostatitis got me. The itis got me.
Gotcha.
Because I was like, what if I have cancer? What if I'm dying?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? What if I'm dying? What if? Because internal shit, anybody who has problems with it knows, and there'll be some fans that'll be like, dude, I had something so similar. They don't really know the prostate well enough. They know about prostate cancer because it's easy to fix now. But they just don't know like what causes prostatitis or inflammation of the prostate. There's a million factors. Hereditary, your diet, all this shit. And I just couldn't figure, we couldn't figure it the fuck out. So I went to two different cats and both of them were like, it seemingly has a tie to your levels of like overworked anxiety and lack of sleep. So when I'm not really, when I'm on the road and I'm moving, I'm not taking care of myself. That was when it was, when it went up. But then there were other times that it wasn't, and it still, and I still was in pain. So it comes and it goes. It's the weird, it's the weirdest shit. I can't describe it. I wish it was gone forever, but there's no fix. There's no like, I mean, you just,
there's nothing you can do where you're like, you're good for the next 15 years.
It goes away on its own. Like a lot of times, like I haven't had it in a long time now. It's been fine. But then sometimes it just comes up out of nowhere. Like there's, I wish,
you ever have it hit you on stage?
No. No, it's never like that.
Don't you find that when you're on stage, like there's times where I'm like, oh my God, I think I have to take a shit or piss or whatever, right, just as they're calling me up. Right, right. And then everything just fucking goes away.
Yeah.
It just goes away for an hour. I don't know how it happens.
Somehow the worst anxiety I've ever had, like if I'm about to do a big show, the moment I get on stage, it's over.
Gone.
But everything before it, you're like, fuck.
You're just so in the moment for that hour that you don't think about any of your problems or anything.
Yeah, it's a trip. Like when I did Conan for the first time, when I was behind the curtain, I was tripping. I was freaking the fuck out. Because I had some drinks. I had friends in the green room. We were feeling it. We were doing good. I was like, this is cool as shit. Everything was lax. Then the moment I got behind the curtain, I was freaking out. I was like, oh shit. Should I not have had another drink? We were fucking off in the room. We were goofing around too much. Then the moment I got out, I was like, oh, it's all good. But yeah, the stage somehow wipes that shit away. But I haven't had it in a while, but it never affected me on stage like that. Because otherwise, I wouldn't go up. If I was feeling that much pressure and annoyance, it would be the only thing on my mind. But they gave me a bunch of different pills, and they also use Rogaine. You know Rogaine, for hair growth?
Yeah.
Rogaine was developed for prostate cancer, for people with prostate problems.
And it just started making them grow hair?
For real.
That's
literally how it happened, yeah.
I read somewhere, and I get things wrong a lot, but I feel like Viagra was for, I can't remember what it was originally for.
Well, it was heart medication, wasn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, that was heart medication.
And then they called it back. They were like, all right. And then the women sent their shit back or stopped using it, but guys kept fucking using it. And that's when they're like, what's going on?
Procter Gamble, like, hey, my heart isn't as good as it wanted to be. Could I have more of those? All these guys are having heart problems.
I don't care about the peripheral
dick
blindness.
Have you ever used those? Bonapulse?
I used one time because I had a sponsor and I was like, I want to see if this shit really works. And it did work, man.
Yeah.
It worked to the point where it got annoying after a while.
See,
Go sleep. You know, I was trying to go to bed,
dude,
man. I'm up all night.
Your dick is on drugs.
Yeah.
That thing, that's such a weird idea that your dick is on drugs.
By itself.
Yeah.
It's doing its own
thing
down there. Yeah.
After you come, it just stays hard the whole time? Yeah?
But it comes back quick. Yeah.
So
real quick.
You just need to
remember when the old school days
when you were
baseball?
14?
Remember the old school days of baseball when the bullpen dude would sprint to the fucking mound?
Yep.
That's what you got. Where they drove him out in a car? That's what the fuck. That's how quick it is.
Yeah.
It's right back after that. Yeah.
Without that, I'm the old third base coach that's hobbling over the line, just slowly getting there.
Limping and shit.
Limping, yeah. I've never tried. I have no ambition to try it. But you know what's so funny? I remember being like 15 and my dad, like an ad came on the radio. I was in the car with my dad and an ad came on for erectile dysfunction pills or something like that. And he was like laughed it off. I was like, what's that? What? And he was like, yeah, you're not going to need those. We got good blood. I was like, man, dad can still get it rock.
I'm glad I don't need it because I'm on all kinds of medications.
What are you on?
That blood pressure, cholesterol.
Are you really?
Oh, I have been since my 20s.
But you don't need it anymore, do you? Really?
Fuck yeah.
You think so?
Look, my doctors have told me, even if you went full vegetarian, whatever, your body just manufactures cholesterol. It's just something your body
hereditary,
does. Straight hereditary. And then I find out I got this weird blood disease that no one knew I had till a couple of years ago. It's called factor 5 Leiden. It's my blood is prone to clot. It's thick. It's thicker than most blood.
Thick blood.
That thick blood, bro.
Got
good blood.
Thick blood.
You know, keep that thick.
You know, Sickler got the thick blood.
So,
So your blood just clots?
It can, yeah. It can clot. Like when I fly and shit, I got to wear compression pants. I got to get up every 90 minutes. I got to walk, shit like that. Stretch my legs.
Well,
I can't take long drives without stopping. I'm the guy in the car. It's got to make everybody stop.
Every 2 hours?
Yeah.
God damn, Sickler. Get out. Hold on, man. I got to get out. My legs will be like stiff as fuck if I don't.
It's ridiculous, dude.
Wait, you wear compression socks on planes?
Pants.
Pants? Compression pants?
On planes, yeah.
Like that Under Armour?
Yep.
Look, you're ready to play.
Yep. I'm ready to
get off the plane. You're ready to play.
I'm fucking gassers. I'm running gassers up and down the aisle, ready for anybody.
Diamondback! Diamondback! Let's go! Touch the line!
Yeah, the fucking gas.
The flight attendant, like, so I was like, please stay in your seat. Sickler's got to run.
I'm one of those idiots that's got to stand in the back. But when I fly with my daughter, that's what I do. I walk her up to the front. They give her, you know, pins and shit. Yeah. And we just keep walking and shit.
Where do you sit on the plane with your kid?
Well, I'm not a fan of turbulence at all.
Who is?
So there are a lot of people that are. They fucking laugh and love it like it's a goddamn roller coaster.
Well, see, it doesn't bother me at all.
It fucks with me these days. It didn't used to. It does
now. Why is it now? Because you got a kid?
You know what it is? It's just the control thing. That's all it is.
Totally.
I'm not in control of that. That's all. Yeah, and I don't know why it's happening and what's going on at this exact moment. You know, I'm the dude that walks on the plane all the time. Like, how we looking? How we looking the whole way, guys? We're going to dip down if we need to. We're going to bank around some shit.
You're outside checking the wings with the pilot before the flight. He's like, sir, get back. And you're like, I just want to see, what it looks like from down here.
This boat looks a little loose right here.
So you
sit over the wings is what they say.
Yeah,
over
right.
the wings, that's, it's a little more minimized. Right, yeah. Right, and in the back, it's worse. And I made that mistake one time. You get that back. The one that doesn't even go back is, first of all, you're back by the toilets.
Yeah, you're by
the hearing
right
all the shit they're talking about. The flight attendants are talking about their bullshit in the back. And that's the worst seat you can get.
Yeah. Do you fly first class ever?
Only if I've ever been luckily upgraded.
Yeah. You know, you'll never pay for it.
No. I shouldn't say I'll never pay for it. If I make enough money, I'd rather fly first class.
But, yeah.
You know, I'm back there with, I go Southwest, bro. So unfortunately, BWI is a Southwest hub. So I just rock Southwest, LAX, to BWI straight. Doesn't make any sense.
I'm flying out of Burbank, I'll always take Southwest. But if I have to go to LAX, I'll do anything else. Yeah. But my God, I used to be freaked out on planes all the time about that shit.
About crashing?
No, just about planes going bad. I had so many bad experiences on planes.
Like
so
what?
Many bad. Oh my God. Leaving Colorado one year, leaving Denver.
It's the worst. Denver's the fucking.
It is.
That's the one they say where the pilots grow fucking hair on their
nuts.
That's
where my lady's from. So we have to go there. I have to go there all the time. Oh yeah.
And you're going out of Burbank?
Yes.
So you got that mountain range that you're going out of like this into the fucking worst one in the country probably.
Yep.
Yeah. It's
terrifying. We were leaving one time, there was a thunderstorm in the mountains. And it was so bad, the plane looked like it was standing still. I'll never forget it. We were looking at the storm out the window, and I was like, we're not moving. Like, the wind was so strong that it was just fighting against the wind. And we had to reroute our course to go so far around the storm, it cost us another hour in the sky of flight time. And getting out around that storm was unforgettable. I mean, even the most seasoned veteran flyers, everyone was looking around like, ooh, it was bad. The whole time was like this. I mean, it was, you know, it was just like you were a little fuck, you know, as if someone was hitting a little toy. You know what I mean? It was like a dog hitting a toy. It just felt like it was getting smacked around. That was one of the worst. And an hour of that, 20 minutes I can handle, 30 minutes. An hour was like, I couldn't do it, man. I was like,
I was just watching.
I might go slit my throat in the bathroom.
There are people showing turban. They're praying. They're like, I love my family. They're recording it though. You know, the whole time I'm like, oh, look at this motherfucker. I had, I've told this story before. This was terrible. Well, it was two stories. And you want to talk about definitely feeling like a fucking honeydew and an asshole on a plane. But I, unbeknownst to me, I had fallen asleep. And vividly, I saw from my POV the plane just dipping and nosediving like this.
Right.
And with everything I had in me, like I was dying, I went, ah! And I mean, people in the back, you know, popping up to see who the fuck it was. I was like, oh, and then I still had about 4 hours to go on this motherfucker. And I just threw my hoodie over my face and laid there for 4 fucking hours. I would have let my blood clot. I'll tell you, I was so humiliated.
You wanted to die.
Oh,
yeah, you're like, take me away.
I was so fucking embarrassed.
Take me away from this shit.
So embarrassed.
Wait, the compression pants are really funny to me because I see old women wearing the socks. And I saw a woman change her socks on the plane, the compression socks. And when she took them off, her feet were like, it's like a balloon filled up.
It helps keep shit in.
Man. It made me laugh so fucking hard. Yeah. I know that's mean as shit, but it was like the Simpsons. It was so weird looking, man.
Another time on a flight, This is an old story I told way back on the Crab Feast, but we were going to
We don't talk about the Crab Feast anymore.
A little bit. We were going to this military gig off, you may have done it off San Mar, I think it's San Marcos Island. You go up to Ventura and you take this rickety fucking ass military plane.
Right.
And I mean, the whole time, everything in it, the trays are shaking. You're just like, what the fuck?
Right.
And they say that when you get out to this little island, it has its own weather because it's so far out there that just shit's swirling around it all the time. It's its own little, literally, island. And we're coming in, and there's a cook that's on it that flies 3-4 times. And they're always doing this.
They're used to that shit. Yeah.
And we're asking questions about, you know, is this normal? And they're fucking with us because they know we're scared.
Right.
All right. And Daryl Wright was on the plane, and Daryl was extra scared. So they took just absolute pleasure in scaring the fuck out of him about this.
So they would.
But then, boom, we hit one. And that's when I saw all the veterans white knuckle their fucking thing. And I was like, that's not good. And here comes flight attendant power walking like she's in compression pants to the fucking back of the goddamn thing. And she sat in her little jumper and she buckled up. And I looked back at her and there was a look on her face like, this isn't normal. And we started getting caught up in wind big time. And we're coming into land. And the whole time, again, everything's shaking. The fucking luggage, all of it. And the wind took us to the point where when we were just about to come in, the plane turned like this. I could see the runway out of
your side window.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Fuck.
And then he banked it back around. And I also remember saying to the guy's wife that was on, I said, that tire looks like it's a little low. We're boarding the plane. She's like, you're right. That fucking thing hit. Boom! That thing hit. And he banked around, bounced it, and then started slowing it down. And it's only so long, this runway. And then you fall off of it. There's a rock cliff, and you're right back into the water. I'm not fucking lying to you about any of this.
I'm never doing this fucking
thing. And we land, and everyone, including these people that do this shit for a living, they are fucking terrified. Mm. We all get off. All anyone can talk about when they take the mic is, holy shit, that fucking flight. Like,
right,
everyone right. got up and said something. Well, it was not hack at all because everyone was still. So we asked those guys, like, how is that? They're like, that's the worst flight we've ever had in like 20 years.
Like, because you're on it.
Yeah. It is. I'm the fucking cooler.
Yeah, I'm never flying with you.
So we go to control tower when we're flying because now I'm scared to death to fly back. I am fucking. This is the worst flight to fly back because you're going on that same fucking plane.
When you go that night, you just do a gig and go back?
One night, and then you fly back the next day. So we go up to the control tower, and he shows us the runway. And basically, he's like, it's broken up into an A, B, C, D. You know, you're supposed to normally land around B, and then you skid or slow down. Around D, you stop. And he's like, you guys hit right here around C, and this is where you stop right here. He's like, you almost went off the fucking thing. And we're like, holy shit. And then I was just terrified to fly back. Terrified.
How would he tell you
that
shit?
I shut my shade. I didn't even want to look out or anything. I was like, and when you go in, when you fly over the rocks, there's these crashed little like Cessnas and shit, like single engine planes are wrecked on the rocks and everything. You see that as you fly into this.
What the fuck? The haunted runway?
They didn't make it.
You see remains.
They didn't make it to the runway.
I like how they don't clean it up. They're like, ah, fuck it.
Holy shit.
Leave it, man. They lost.
Well, that is a perfect segue to lead into what I asked you, what you wanted to come talk about. You said failure. That is perfectly a good segue to go into failure. So tell me some, talk to me about failure. Like, I would say, what's one of your earliest moments outside of
the business?
Yeah.
In life, my earliest failure? I would say some of my earliest fear was like not initially getting into colleges that I wanted to get into after high school, and that was embarrassing.
Why?
Because people could get in, and I was a mediocre student. I was like a B minus C average, you know? I was floating my way through.
I was a 3.0.
Yeah, man. I played sports. That's all I gave a fuck about. So like, it turned out that I was a much better college student because it was classes I gave a fuck about, right? I graduated with honors in college, which is ironic.
Where'd you graduate?
Arizona State, bitch.
What's up, player?
But, you know, I mean, you know, listen, the Harvard of the desert, dog.
Is that what they call it?
They call it the Havarti of the desert, man. The cheese of the desert. Shit is so easy to get.
But I
didn't get into a few schools that I kind of wanted to get into, and it really kind of like, it was more embarrassing, right? Nobody knew, but It's more embarrassing because people are getting into schools and
all your friends.
All I want to do, and all I want to do, is go to California. But I couldn't afford California schools. There's no way my parents were going to give me money for that. So Arizona was the place I was like kind of targeting to go anyway. But I didn't get into, you know, other places that I kind of had my heart on. And
what was your goal? Which one did you want? Well, you're Chicago, right? Did you want Northwestern, or did you want to get the fuck out of Chicago?
Couldn't get into Northwestern. No way. U of I.
What's that?
Could University of Illinois.
Iowa? Oh,
yeah.
Illinois.
But Northwestern, can't get into Northwestern. That, I mean, that's if you really have your career mapped out. I wrote a letter when I was in high school that said I wanted to become a comedian. I put it up on Instagram. I told Rogan this a couple of weeks ago. But I knew from the jump that's what I wanted to do. But I also wanted to go to college and have that college experience because everybody was going.
I was the same way.
But I didn't give a fuck about what I was going to do in college. I was like, I'm just going to be a comedian. Like,
did
I knew
you test well on the SATs?
No, I'm so dumb, dude. I'm so dumb at standardized tests.
Honest to God, I was horrible.
I'm garbage.
If anybody knows, for real, I've been researching how to look up my old SAT scores. I'm trying to see.
Can you not find them online?
It's got to be out there.
Yeah, they're public record, right?
They keep saying they are, but I don't think they're public. You have to pay for them, but they're yours, but
right.
I don't know.
They're available to have.
Yeah.
I think
I had a couple community colleges like, I don't know if you're right for us.
What is it? What is that, 1600?
What?
The SATs.
1600 is, I think that's perfect. At
Isn't
least
that
it used to be. I think so.
See, we don't, we,
or it, perfect.
In Chicago, it's ACTs. You can do both.
Right. We had that too.
ACT was 32? God, I don't know. Can they look shit up? I was going to say, I don't want to fuck
ACT?
Up.
ACT? They can look it up.
ACT is... I think it's 32.
Research.
I think it's 32. And the first time, so a dumb guy says this. I'm not good at standardized tests. I'm not good at standardized tests.
I'm not either.
It's so bad. It's so bad. Other shit, I'm great at. There's stuff that I'm so great at school wise, but scholastically, dude, fucking, I do a test and I was like, whatever. So I think the first time, if it is out of 32 or 35, I think the first time I got like a 23. Woof. I mean, garbage. Absolute trash. And I took it two more times to get my score up. And I don't know what I ended up with, 28 or something like that. Ended up being good, but I had to take it again.
I can't remember. I know mine was not great.
Yeah.
I might have been right around like a 900. It was not great.
What is it? What's the average?
I don't know.
1,000?
Over 1,000, I feel like, is average. Or like that's the litmus test to get you somewhere, at least that number.
They give you 800 to sign your name and shit.
I think that, for real, I think they give you like 600 to sign your fucking name just to show up for the fucking thing. But I took it again a second time, and it only went up 10 points, and I was like, fuck this.
Damn.
At this point,
that
I can't afford college anyway. I'm going to community college.
Right.
I don't even know why I bothered all prepping.
How many did you go to? One school, and that's it?
No, I went to community college, and when I got my AA from community college, I came here to go to Cal State Northridge in 94.
Shout out Northridge.
And the morning I woke up, getting ready to get into my 1990 Honda Civic with original rims and drive this great country, was Martin Luther King Day, 1994, and the Northridge quake destroyed the school.
Wow.
Destroyed the school.
Damn, that's nuts. You were out here for that shit.
I came out. I still drove here like a fucking idiot and did a semester at college at Northridge on two classes, one on a sidewalk and the other one was just under a tree every fucking day. They had nothing.
How ghetto
I was homeless.
Shit?
I was supposed to be. I thought I'd meet people. I was trying to get the college experience. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, I got quad mates. I'm going to meet some people.
Uh-huh.
Nope. The whole school's destroyed.
The second class is under the Tahunga Free Bridge or some shit. You're like, we're meeting under the bridge at 2:30.
We'll see y'all bum camp at 2:30. That's what it was like, for real.
So my college experience was phenomenal. That was, I mean, you know, nope. I had too much fucking fun. But anyway, going back, like, a lot of the failures I experienced in school were like in that world of like, I wasn't a jock, I wasn't a nerd, but I was friends with all the above.
Yeah, me too.
But I wanted to fit in a little bit more into like, you know, I had a clique to go to college with, didn't have it. And so that fucked me up a little bit. Like it bummed me out.
Was everyone in your, like all your
most
friends?
People stay in the Midwest.
They do.
And it's not like I really,
Wisconsin, or whatever,
Indiana,
there.
Illinois, Ohio State, all the Midwest schools. And some of those schools I couldn't get into, you know, so it was, I didn't want to stay, but you want to know you could. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't want to know you have access even
and
if
that you, bothered you?
Yeah, it fucks you up a little bit because you feel dumb. You feel stupid. You're like, what am I? Am I fucking dumb? Like, am I just an idiot? Because I'm smarter than that guy. But it's just, some people are so good at school, but they're idiots in public, you know? Yeah. I had so much more street smart than I had school smart.
Me too.
And that bothered the shit out of me because I was always like, how can these fucking morons that I know do well in school? They're idiots. But my whole thing was I was so distracted all the time in school anyway. It was so hard to pay attention. It was so boring. I was so fucking bored.
But also, as a young boy, 14 to 17, you're just a walking erection full of testosterone. Yes. And I don't give a fuck about, we got letters in math now? What the fuck are we talking about over here?
Like, get the fuck out of here.
Get the fuck out of here.
Where's numbers math? That's the only math I like. I was so bad at just simple shit. I just hated it. But complex stuff I was drawn to. If it was, you know, like science was sexy as fuck to me. Like science was cool, but it, certain avenues I was so garbage at. I just couldn't wrap my head around it. Probably because math was the root of it. I always hated fucking math. You know, you're going to use it when you, when do I use math?
I really believe.
I never use math.
I have only outside of basic math.
Yeah.
I've never used trig or any of that.
Why would you? When would you need it?
I already know. I cannot help my daughter with math. I'm gonna like, you're just going to have to talk to your mom or I'm going to have to pay for a tutor because I'm not fucking. And I don't know how to do that. When I was working with my stepson, his homework, that Common Core shit, I just looked at it and I was like, look, I was bad at the original shit. I have no idea how to do this shit. Good
That's luck. Funny because I think my parents played it off like they just wanted me to figure it out on my own. But it was just because they didn't know. You know what I mean? They were like, you need to finish it. And I know when I'd leave the room, my dad would be like, I don't know what the fuck that shit is. I have no idea what that shit is.
I used to find, you know, they used to have the key in the back of the book in a lot of them. Mm-hmm. So I would just write the answer and like, you need to show your work.
You're like,
you want to video me flipping to the back of the fucking book? That's how I fucking got this answer.
Now kids can just do it online. They can just cheat online.
Well, that's what he does. He'll be like, how do you spell? And then it spells it for you. I'm like, you're not. Yeah,
but think about it like this, though. Some of that stuff is so unnecessary. It's so antiquated. We actually don't need some of it. I'm amazed. I hate when someone's like, the system is in place. The system works. You're like, yeah, but times change. So they have to keep up with the times.
And also not for every person.
Yeah, it's not the same. I think that's the most fucked up thing is school. When I was young, I was so bad. I would get kicked out of school, kicked out of classes because I was either fighting or I was disruptive.
You were fighting?
Oh yeah.
What do you tell me about that?
Oh my god.
Why were you so angry?
Every kid that would talk, if a kid talked shit, I'd hit him.
And are we talking about elementary or are we in middle at this point? What age?
Both, up until junior, up until almost high school.
So were they picking on you or
sometimes would be picking on me if I was young.
Why?
The redheaded thing.
You did get picked on for that?
Not really. I'm not trying to like project like that was
but
the
here and there you would get those people.
Once in a great while by someone older than me.
And that was a trigger for you?
I hit him right in the face.
Punched him.
As hard as I could. I mean, right away. I wouldn't even think twice. I swear to God, it's so unfortunate. I told.
Who's it unfortunate for? I think I know who it's unfortunate for.
Yeah, not for me. Bad anger issues. But also that's I talked about it on Callan, on Fighter and the Kid. That's this nickname, Slugger Santino. This elementary school teacher said that. Because I wouldn't stop fighting people. Because I would get mad at somebody for either if they were making fun of me, not picking on me, like joking about me, mm-hmm. and I would just take out on my anger on them. I just hit them.
Where does that anger come from?
I don't know.
You come from a broken home, divorced parents.
Yeah, but my parents split when I was one. Before I didn't know them together. Do you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I didn't have that experience. But my dad was in and out of my life all the time. But that wasn't really the root of it. Like I don't think that was it. I think it was just
in and out
know.
Of your life, why? What did he do?
Prison.
For real?
Prison.
See, I don't know when you're joking with me or not.
I swear to God. I swear to God.
What? Are you comfortable talking
totally,
about that?
Totally, yeah. I don't
what
give a
What did
fuck.
He do to go to prison?
Drugs.
Selling or?
Both. Selling, buying, being involved right, with
wait.
Pieces of shit.
Let's go back to the beginning. Yeah. Your mom and dad split at one.
Before
well, you're a one.
Right,
do you have
right
any
around.
Siblings? Is there anyone that precedes
not from them.
You?
Not from them, no. Okay. I'm the only one from them.
Not from them.
But I have halves. I have half siblings.
Okay.
But I'm the only one from them, from my biological mom and dad.
So when do you, at what age do you remember meeting your dad?
Shit, maybe like, I remember like maybe 3 or 4. I remember going to his apartment when I was 3 or 4 and watching Bears games. Like that, I kind of remember, but not much. He was like a figment of my imagination as a kid. I used to talk about it on stage, he drove a Firebird. Remember Pontiac Firebird?
Yeah,
he drove a Firebird. He had a million of them. He would trade them out in and out, different colors. But he loved cocaine. He We love cocaine.
Doing it and selling it?
Everything, all the above. And then just unruly people that he was surrounding himself with. I'm sure they were involved in criminal activity as well. You know what I mean? Just he had a lot of protection because my grandfather's...
His dad?
His father's people were, you know...
Dialed in?
They were people.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were people.
But he would go to prison.
He went to prison.
In Cook County?
Yeah, Cook County Prison. This is how I knew my grandfather had people. First of all, my grandfather worked at the dog track. At the dog track.
Yeah, bro.
There goes
and not,
the rabbit.
Not greyhounds either. Like no, dog, fucking
just loose dogs, yeah. Just loose neighborhood animals. But I would go see him. I'd go watch amateur boxing sometimes at the Greyhound track. It was called Maywood. Maywood's the dog track. I don't think it's around anymore. Arlington is the horse track. But here's how I knew. His friends all had hilarious TV nicknames. Only when I was older. Like his best friend was this guy, Joe the Hat. Joe the Hat always had nice cars. Brand new Corvette, brand new Porsche. You know, like,
yeah.
I was like, this motherfucker's a magician. What does he do? You know? And then I got old enough to realize, like, these guys don't have jobs. They kick it all fucking day. So what did he do to make money?
And are they younger at the time? Well,
they were probably, no, I mean, 50s, they were probably in their 50s or 60s, right. They weren't like 30s or 40s. But it was always so mysterious. And then I knew all these guys with all these bullshit nicknames, like Joe the Hat, you know, the Marksman. I was like, who are these?
The Marksman.
I think I know who he is. Yeah.
But you think it's, you as a kid, you don't.
The Marksman.
Yeah, you just don't wrap your head around all that stuff. You don't understand what any of that shit is.
It's normal. It's
yeah,
all
it just
normal
sounds like normal
until
shit.
You realize right. when that shit is not normal.
Right, right. And then you realize what the hat.
Mom, I'm going to the Marksman's house.
Yeah. Like,
no. No, you're not.
No. So that's how I knew my grandfather had friendlies, you know? And so my dad and his brother were up to no gooders, and they were always in trouble. Always in trouble. Both great athletes, both like had good opportunities to do things and just couldn't stay out of fucking trouble. And then my dad's brother went to Vietnam and got addicted to the horse, like so many of those dudes did. And then had a tough time with his life until he got clean, found Jesus.
That's what took it.
He found Jesus hard.
And in then prison? Apparently, Jesus lives on death row.
Yeah,
a lot of them find him.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does. He's in cell block two.
Yep.
But and then he got his life so clean together. But my whole childhood with my dad.
Are you close with your uncle now?
No, he's in Florida. But he found God. He works with this woman. I mean, he works at this church and his life is good. He's living a nice, good, clean life. But my old man, you know, we had this weird up and down relationship of like, just was in and out of prison, so didn't really know him.
Did you ever go visit him in prison?
Never. But he would call all the time. This is my favorite. Back in the day when they used to prison collect calls, you know?
Yeah.
He'd be like, you have a collect call from Cook County prisoner inmate for 8527, you know?
It would say his number.
Yeah, it would say the number. And then it would go from, dude, and it'd be a chance for them to leave their name, mm-hmm. right? But my mother would never, she would be angry that I accepted it. So she didn't want me to accept the call. She's like, I'm not paying for that motherfucker to pay, you know, like, fuck
right,
him.
You got to pay for you to talk to your own kid.
Yeah, yeah, fuck that. So she would deny it sometimes. So he knew that it would get denied. So he would leave his message in the time when he's supposed to leave his name. So it's supposed to just be like, you have
That's
a collect call from Rick, you know?
Yeah.
So it'd be like, he would leave a collect call and be like, you have a collect call from Cook County inmate, da da da. And then they go, from, and they go, hey, what's up? It's me. I just want to say hi. And I love, and it would cut it off every time.
So listen, cut that new shit with some baking soda. Listen, they're coming to buy a new.
It was just so fun. It was just such a funny. But so I never had like, if trying to tie it all back in, I never had like anger because of him or anything like that. Because my stepfather is the greatest dude that's ever lived.
Oh,
like,
so you did have someone step in.
Mm-hmm. He came in. Yeah.
How old?
They met when I was, I don't know. I think it was like three, maybe they met and started dating when I was young, three or four. And then, and he's the greatest dude, so he's a great father figure. But it's just, I don't think I had like anger and resentment towards him. I just had a lot of pent up fucking anger, and maybe it was just in the blood. My whole family's like that. Just
well, you got good blood. We already know that.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think it's just attitude shit. I think it's just we come from that world of asshole busting balls, blue collar, chip on your shoulder, angry. You know, like I was talking the other week about my grandfather used to make fun of rich people all the time. His angle on things was so genius. That he was like, you know, he'd be like, hey, why you want to go to a fancy restaurant anyway? The lights are dark. You can't even see the fucking food. Like, that's how like a poor person jokes about the rich.
Right.
To make it sound like they have it worse.
Right.
But I think that was always kind of the culture. You know, it was always that proud of who we are, proud of our thing. But I guess you just, it's just a weird toughness that some Chicago people have for some fucking reason. I had it for some reason in spades. I was just an angry motherfucker.
And at what age does your, or has he, is your dad still alive?
He's alive.
And has he settled down at all?
Oh, he's been clean for a long time.
So what age in your life is
he got too old to do drugs? You know, he says, he was saying, he was like, I got too old to do drugs. What age did we?
What age did you like finally connect with your dad?
You know, in and out, like I would connect with him a little bit in my college years, a little bit. And then after college, it's always been in and out, in and out. Because it's always been like, you know that song, The Cat's in the Cradle and the Silver. Remember that shit?
Yeah.
That's like, that's exactly like my life. I mean, because he says like, when are we going to get together? And it's like, oh, one day, you know, we will. We'll have a good time. And then he talks about in the song, it's such a sad fucking song.
I think
song.
He even says, when your mom picks up the fucking collect call.
When are we going to connect? When mom accepts my fucking phone call, son, we'll get together then. but that's I think we've always been, you know, it's always been like, you know, we're getting real serious. It's always been in
that's
and out.
Okay,
but no, it's just been my choice to be like my own man now. This is weird to say, but I'm honest about it. I don't care. We're two men that live in the, you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to, that's not your dad. It's hard to think about it like your dad.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have that kind of connection. So he's just a family member. He's like a man, you know? I mean, it would fucking shatter his soul to know that's the truth. But I think that's just an honest, we never had that connection, you know? Like, you never had this, like, there's love. There's got to be love because it's blood and that's just forever. But I never had this like ethereal bond thing because we were on two different worlds. And now, even more so, I'm on two different worlds, you know? I live fucking 3,000 miles away.
Right.
And I have my own life, my own family, I'm trying, my own career. And like, it's hard. It's hard enough to stay in contact with my mom.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just, those things take over. So.
Is he still in Illinois, Chicago?
Hell yeah. They don't fucking leave. Those people don't leave.
So.
How many people left Baltimore?
Nobody. I mean, they moved out of the city, but yeah, they haven't left
they don't
area.
Leave there.
No, yeah.
You don't do
all
it.
Still there.
Right, they all live in the fringe area.
Has
of
he
Chicago.
Come to see any shows in Chicago?
Yeah, he came up to Madison, Wisconsin, with my grandfather to go. He's seen a few shows. He saw me do my Showtime special.
If you wouldn't mind not selling some merch, we're trying to move some product to your motherfucking show.
Right at the merch table, I'm like, who's that? What is that? What is that?
You get some of Andrew's shirts, and we got pure cut cocaine over here, y'all.
Yeah, I think it was. You know, and he's made good on his life.
Did he like? Did they like the show?
As far as I know, I can't really. You can never really tell.
You don't talk. You don't hang out a little after to go to dinner.
A little
or
bit.
Something.
No, we do sometimes. We have before, but we
Does
had
your mom talk to him at all.
No.
No.
No, they ain't straight. No, you know what it is?
What about
though?
Your stepdad? Does he get it with your dad? Does your dad resent him or
no.
Does he thank him for stepping in?
No, I don't think they have any relationship whatsoever,
nothing.
but there's no hate at all cuz he knows my stepdad is the guy. You know what I mean? There's no like there's no fuck you, there's no you know what I mean? Like it's more like polite, cordial, like when he would come pick me up when I was younger. You know, once in a great while, you know, it'd be like, hey, okay, hey, you know, it was just real polite shit. It was never like this battle because it's not like that battle happens when it's someone's like, with my ex-wife, you know?
Right.
That my mom isn't my dad's ex-wife. It's not like that.
Yeah, it was only, what, 1 year?
Well, they were together for like 3 years, okay. Married. I don't even know how long before that, a couple years before, but whatever, maybe a 5 year total. That's how little I know. But it's different, you know what I mean? Like when you sever marriage from that kind of world of like because of going to jail and being up to no fucking good, it ain't like you left me. It's like nah, man, you left us.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it's more. I think he knows that shit. it's not like he has a blinded sensibility of what really happened. He's smart enough to understand. But you know, I think the things that I took away from it are. I probably have his attitude. I have his anger. I have his, like, he's just brash. Big dude, big, angry, was always mean. But the things I took from him that were positive were, like, he was phenomenal with people, and I always admired that. He could talk to anybody, was scared of nobody. And I mean that in like, a friendly way and also in a racial barrier, socioeconomic way, right? He would go to, he's a contractor, he would go to probably the worst neighborhoods. We'd go to the toughest, toughest parts of Chicago, and I'd come with him on jobs sometimes. And they loved him. Like in these communities where, you know, white people aren't supposed to go, if we want to talk real talk, you know, people don't want to talk about, white boys aren't supposed to go over there. And he would go and people, hey, what's up, Rick? People would love him because he was a man of the people. And I always admired that, that he, anybody he could fuck with. I don't care what right. skin color, how much money they had. It wasn't just about race. It was just like he could fuck with anybody. So I loved that about him. And I think I took some of that as far as like receiving people. That was a positive from a negative.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck who you are, where you're from. I have friends that are all different colors and races and socioeconomic classes. And that's something that he always made me, I was so surprised. Old black women fucking loved him. They were like, he was just this comforting, confident, very confident. You know, no one could stand in his way from like getting work. I think that was an admirable quality. If you only transfer that into something else, you know what I mean? But those things I took from him, you know, strong personality, strong minded, strong will, not weak. You know what I mean? Things that like I see in other people that I admire. When someone's a hard worker that like doesn't give a fuck when they get hit, when they get down, it's like, I'll just get up again. Fuck it. Hit me again. So that was a positive thing for me, especially when it came to like sports, relationships, this business, you know, you can't be a pussy and try to get into this game.
No.
You learn fast. You're like, oh, you just kind of have to be tough as fuck to like deal with shit all the time.
That's why, you know, you've got all these people online that just want to shit on you and say the worst fucking things possible. Yeah. But for me, I'm like, my own mother looked right in my face and told me she hated me. I was a loser. I was like, do you really think your fucking comments have any bearing on my fucking day?
Good luck.
No, bro. I'm still dealing with some shit. Okay, your little fucking sprinkles of, oh, you suck, Sickler. I hate your laugh. So I don't give a fuck.
By the way, that's your mom commenting on some of those. But you know what's so funny is, well, I was talking to Kreischer about this shit that he was talking about some guy that was trolling him a little bit. And I said, you know what the crazy thing is? Anybody who says something fucked up online, it's funny that we sometimes hear it because all the positive shit is so much nicer to like engage with fans that are like wanting to be a part of this fun world.
Right.
And the haters, okay, whatever, man. People are oddly jealous. I know that's a cheap way, but you're obviously jealous that someone's having fun without you. It's kind of like this strange childish complex of like, fuck these motherfuckers. Like, why, bro? What is that really what you want to be like? You want to hate on shit just because? But
also successful people don't have time to do that shit.
They're busy
being successful or trying to be successful.
Right. You hear Jay-Z shitting on people all day. Like, he didn't have any time to do it. He's like, I got comments.
Like, I don't know about this. This shit ain't any good.
I'll tell you something, Meek Mill. You know, get the fuck out of here. So we're talking to Kreischer, and he said some guy was trolling him really hard, and it was pissing him off, like really pissing him off. It was getting personal. It was weird. And I said, you know what's crazy about that, though? It's like, you think you can out-shit-talk me? I'm in here all the time. You don't even have the key, motherfucker. Like, you can't get behind the door of how crazy this is.
You think I haven't thought what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I thought that about myself.
I can do this better than you can.
Way worse.
In fact, sometimes when people say something negative, I troll them with something even more negative that they can't even hit about me. That it's like, good luck, bitch. You'll never get there.
Right. Top that one.
Yeah, you'll never get this deep. So I think half of the time I fuck around with it. Sometimes Rogan's always like, don't engage. Don't engage. I'm like, Rogan will say some things to me sometimes where I think...
I gotta imagine he can engage. The amount of fucking comments
he doesn't at all. But he also forgets. He forgets how famous he is.
Right.
And how not famous I am. So sometimes he'll be like, he said to me, what did he say the other day? He was like, because we had moved and he was like, he's like, you gotta get yourself in a gated community, you know, you gotta do that at some point. And I was like... I'm not you, dog.
Yeah, right.
I'm not you, dude.
I got a chain link fence around my fucking yard. All right?
It's like he's so famous, I think, because he disconnects from those worlds. Like, he doesn't read hating comments. He doesn't get into, but we have so much more fan engagement because we're at a more ground level. You know, he's built such an empire. I think it's hard for him to know because he's always like, don't listen to that shit. Don't look at that shit. And you're like, well, I see it more than you because it's there more than you. You know what I mean? Like, it's just there. For him, it's like, it's a flood. For us, it's, you know, it's a stream.
Right.
You know, it's like.
I'm fortunate, though. My fans, even coming from the Crab Feast, the ones that have come to the Honeydew, I have really good fans. They're good people.
Yeah.
They're smart. They're intelligent. They say shit like, thank you for coming to Edmonton. Like, thank you for coming to my city and doing shows. You know, you get that handful of fucking idiots or whatever, but.
I think for the most part, people that talk shit are usually, they usually really like your shit. You know, they usually, I posted something the other day about a guy at the Comedy Store. I was on when I was in a weird mood and I was shitting on this dude a little bit because he was having no fun. He was like this, you know, like a fucking, like a brat. And so I was fucking with him. I was like, what's your fucking deal, man? You're not having any fun. I saw you not laugh once at Allie. Like, is this that bad of a night? And whatever. Then I joked with him a little bit, had some fun. They laughed it off. And then I bought him a round of drinks. I was like, I'm going to buy you guys drinks so your night gets better. Okay. The next morning I got, you know, a message and the dude was like explaining why they were in a bad mood. And he was like, we had a tough night. Shit was bad for us. Yada, yada, yada. You completely changed the night around. You bought us a round of drinks. And when you went through on it, not just said it, he's like, it like dynamically changed our whole night and our whole life. So I was like, yeah.
And I really laughed at the other comedian.
He goes, Ian Edwards was good. You were garbage.
But thanks for the drinks.
But thank you. But thank you for, yeah, Ian appreciated it too. But it was like one of those things where you're like, oh yeah, they weren't, you don't know why people are mad or upset or what they're, what's fueling their hate or their sadness or their whatever. I think people forget people have issues. So you don't know. I don't know. But I imagine most people that are hating, they don't really fucking hate, man. They just have some shit that they're going through or some fucked up shit in their life that's not.
Oh, yeah.
That's all it really is.
Right.
You know? So tying it into your theme, I think through failure and through heartache or heartbreak, I think all that stuff needs to, I think we all need to keep it in the front of your mind. It's like, dude, you don't know what the guy at fucking Starbucks is going through, you know? He's an asshole to me when he served me my coffee. It's like, dude, maybe his fucking brother has cancer.
Right.
You know, you don't know that shit. It's so hard to, it's hard to keep it in the front of your head.
But that's also a maturity that you eventually have to reach as well.
Totally.
Because that's an internal thing and you've got to give somebody the benefit of the doubt. But I don't let it go too long.
No.
Like, just, I know some people have cancer too. Quit being a fucking asshole. You know what I'm saying?
I got prostatitis, bro. Give me my fucking latte. That's my shit.
So what, speaking of this industry, what sort of failures have you had? Like, because there's a lot of people that'll say some ice cold shit to you too in this industry.
Yeah.
And
oh,
do
yeah.
things to you. What sort of failures have you had in this industry that you want to share? You're
yeah, comfortable I mean, sharing. I mean, I've had, no, I mean, I'm comfortable with most. I just told you my whole fucking story about my father in prison.
I had to dig it out of you.
Yeah.
I appreciate you just throwing that at me. When my dad was in prison, I was like, don't fucking send anything else. We'll talk when you get there.
I think the failures of the business are, it's funny to, like, pinpointing one thing is tough, but I think it's an amalgamation of things that kind of come together that really feels like you're beaten down, like not getting, you know, like not getting Montreal the ton of times that I did go out for it was such a big hard hit for me because you see your peers doing it and that bothers you. Montreal, people don't know Just for Laughs is a comedy festival, but that fucked me up for a while when I was young.
I never got it.
You never did.
I've showcased, I want to say, 4 or 5 times. And
well, now you're so far beyond when you would quote-unquote get it, it doesn't matter anymore. But when you're young and you really want it, and that's something that's just, it's so powerful, man. It's like, why don't I, like, I mean, recently, you know, I'm trying to do a new hour and I can't have any, no fish or bite, you know, no one's biting the bait. So that's tough. Like, because I have a good hour. I know I have this thing I really want to present before it goes dry to me, before it gets stale.
Right.
But I haven't had a lot of fish bite on that. And that's kind of a tough, you know, your failures are all relative, right? When someone's like, I hate when somebody's like, why would they care? They have everything in the world. It's like, no, man, at every level there is, every fucking lily pad has, you know, has its own fucking weak side. So like, people just don't see that. They just think, oh, they look so much nicer. They're more set up. They have more shit. But, you know, multiple times I had a show with NBC that literally never went. And that was probably one of my biggest heartbreaks. Ugh. We wrote this thing about me and my family working at the dog park together. Seriously, called The Track. We wrote this thing up. And NBC, after I didn't get SNL, another big failure, when I got,
right, you yeah, were, when you I got were, nicked. You were
yeah,
right there.
Yeah, yeah, I tested, so, and
wait,
went out there.
Go to that. How far, walk us, because I'm just an SNL fan from childhood.
Yeah, no, me too. I still watch it.
The whole process and everything. Yeah, I just watched Sandler's the other night again, too.
Well, I've talked about it a lot. I don't want to exhaust it, but I went out and I tested again.
This is in front of Lorne and everything. Yeah. This is the, if you watch the, like the Best of Will Ferrell and all that, this is that moment
on stage. Yeah. Testing.
You can't see anyone.
Not really. Right? They're down below. They're
but it's only a couple of them, right?
Yeah. Three or four.
Doing all this for 3 or 4 people, not a live buzzing room.
Nope. People at a business table, but they laughed, which was good. You know, the old rumor that they don't laugh. I was like, no, they laughed, which was phenomenal. But, Yeah, and then I went to LA. Then I got a phone call to come back to go have lunch with Lauren or whatever, or dinner or something. And I flew back, and then still ended up not getting it. It was a face rejection, though. At least he was.
He told you there at that.
Yeah,
dinner.
He was really polite about it. I mean, he told me in so many words. It was more like, "You're not the right puzzle piece for this puzzle." That's really in so many words. That was it, and I respected it because it was kind of like, you know, he was saying, he was like, "Oh, you're talented, but you're definitely talented enough to be on the show. It's just I don't think it fits right now." So you know, but that, and then I went to NBC and I was like, I have this show idea. And since, because the SNL thing, I think they were like, all right, let's fuck with this dude.
Yeah.
And we had this track, we wrote this thing. We loved it. It was so, I was so into it. Then they paired us with these other dudes. And I was like, okay, maybe this has got some movement. And then I hear rumors that like the president's changing, like there's going to be a new president. And I was like, okay, maybe we'll see, we're still in good shape, right? And then they were like, what if we put it somewhere else? I was like, outside of the track? And they're like, yeah, I don't think the dog track is entertaining. And I was like, it's the whole show.
You've never fucking seen anything.
I know.
Still.
I know. No, I know. I was like, but it's almost like saying, that's like saying the two broke girls, you know, if you were like,
sweetheart, call Michael Vick and see if he wants a guest star. We'll get this off the ground.
It was just, they were so counterintuitive to like everything that I thought was going to work. And they kept trying to like fit new pieces in it. And then by the time it was over and it wasn't going to happen, it had changed to something totally different. You know what I mean? It was like, I don't know. I became probably like a blind black guy at a golf course. You know what I mean? It was like something absurd. I was like, what the fuck is this script, dude? It wasn't even us anymore. It disappeared. So that was big. That one hurt a ton. That one hurt a lot because I really thought it was dope. And it was about my family. It was about addiction. It was if Shameless was a real comedy, you know?
Gotcha. Yeah,
Shameless is literally like, show. It's like my Chicago family, right. Trouble family. But I wanted to make it an honest sitcom comedy. Like how can we make that the funny version, you know? So that hurt because I fucking really wanted it to go. I wanted to at least make the pilot. I was like, give me a shot to make this fucking pilot. And we never even got around to making the pilot. So that shit sucks. Cause you're like, fuck, we put so much effort and time. And then it gets you into a place where you're like, man, maybe I'm not that good of a writer. Man, maybe I'm not that good of a comedian. Man, maybe I'm not that good in the room. Man, I'm not that good. Period. Yeah. Yeah. It trickles down to you at the end of the night going, I guess I'm not that fucking good. Maybe they don't want me. So, which is bullshit. You know, in retrospect, you're like, well, they wanted you in the fucking first place. It just, things don't work. Things don't always work. But I've had that in my career a few different times. You know, I've been fucking cut out of shit. I've talked about that before too. Like I've been cut out of stuff where you're like
what?
I think I did great. I mean, just last year I did The Room with Franco and those guys. Mm-hmm. And I totally got cut out. You want to have a nice laugh if the audience wants to have a laugh? Go watch The Room. I'm in like five scenes. I say nothing.
Really? You're on camera saying
oh yeah,
nothing?
Bro. Oh my God. In the first 2 minutes, you see my fucking head.
They couldn't cut around.
They left me in that bitch and I didn't say one word. In fact, I made a trailer and I put it up on Instagram for a while. I ended up taking it down, but I did like a super trailer of me and all my scenes.
And from just that?
Yeah. And I was like, this summer, Andrew Santino is in The Room. And it was like dramatic music. And then at the end, I was like, but he doesn't say one fucking line. I didn't say shit. I had said shit, but I just got sliced. I've gotten sliced out of a bunch of different stuff. And I'm not throwing anybody under the bus. I'm not being disrespectful. It's just that happens. It happens sometimes. But again, you get in your head. What did I do? What did I do wrong? I thought I ripped. It's not that. There's a million factors that go into play into these things that you have zero control over, you know? So that's the note of the business is none of it is fair and none of it makes sense.
Get that out of your head now. Don't even think you're coming into something fair.
No, yeah. If anybody's looking to be a part of this world, not only is it not fair, but none of it's going to make sense. I think
life
that's the biggest
isn't
thing.
Fair.
Yeah, no, not at all. Yeah. This is the business is just a microcosm of what the world is like. It's like it's confusing. People have power that don't deserve it. People don't get things that do deserve it. People, those that are in control, oftentimes have no fucking idea what they're talking about. I mean, that's the world. That's the world in general of any business. You know, I say that to my parents all the time because they're always like, oh, what are they like? I'm like, they're just like whatever business you worked for. It's the same thing.
That's right.
There's someone up there. There's someone right here. There's someone down there. We're all trying to work to get up. There's the same kind of guy is in the business here that's in sales somewhere else. And marketing here, it's the same thing. It's just ours is more of a, there's more of a window on the business. America knows more about the business. So because they see it and they hear about it, the zeitgeist and meta shit, you know, you shows like entourage and you learn about the business. That doesn't happen with guys who are like fucking, you know, window blind salesmen. You don't know about that. But you don't know their competitive bullshit right. world. So, you know, I think all that stuff kind of.
Still waiting on these Venetians.
Yeah, where are these Venetians? Give me them drop blinds, please.
I hate those fucking blinds. We never had those.
Venetians?
No. What's what are the long ones called that every fucking apartment in California?
I don't know, man. Curtains?
Is it vertical blinds, maybe?
Yeah, probably vertical blinds.
We never had those.
I used to have slat. Well, no, because we have cold weather, slat windows. Yeah.
Had those. I never saw those, so I moved out here either.
I was like, air just comes through all the time? They're like, yeah. I'm like, okay.
I used to have a lady's cats would come in my apartment because I'd leave them open and they could sleep.
Sneak right in. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, slat
blinds are slat windows are bullshit. My second apartment out here had slat windows. And then in the winter,
floor to ceiling too. If you don't know, floor to ceiling, where wind comes and blows shit in them and everything else. There's no screen on.
Even when you close it, it's not closed.
It's not closed.
That's what the slogan should be: slat windows. Even when you close, we're still open. Yeah, we're still open. Heat gets out. If you're trying to heat your little apartment up because it's cold, right out the window. Fuck that. And people are like, don't get cold. It's like California does get cold at night.
Too.
In the winter, it gets fucking cold. And the heat would seep right out. I used to have two space heaters on either side of my fucking bed because my old room, there was no insulation is not even a real word to this motherfucker. I don't know what they built it out of. Just scrap metal. I don't think there was wood. I think it was
just
metal.
Bunch of old stuffed animals stuffed in the walls.
It was just old mattresses they just threw in there.
Old mattresses and shit.
It was so cold in that fucking room. It was so fucking cold, and I would have to. And the windows out here, windows in California, got a paper thin. I mean, this is a window
that
in California.
Is a window.
And man, it would get so cold. I'd have a space heater on either side of the bed, and it would get nice in the middle of the night. And then if I'd wake up to piss, the foot of my bed would be fucking Antarctica freezing. I'd go my little
bones get all stiff and shit.
Oh my god!
Damn.
Take my little dick out and couldn't piss. A little tiny penis. I'd have to push it right back out of my body.
Prostatitis.
That's
what might have started it.
Yeah. I'm going to blame that fucking apartment. Giving me trouble in my booty, man.
What else? What other failures have you had?
I mean...
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Can you go to...
I think I did. Here, I'll give you one.
Go ahead.
You know, I have... Not. This is odd. I did last season of MTV's Punk'd. And
it's one of my favorite stories. Get him, Russia.
Well, get him, Russia.
People still hit me.
Well, I'll say this. It wasn't a failure, but I thought it was going to be a success.
The show?
Yeah, like I thought it was going to move my needle a lot.
You know,
like I was excited. I was like, I wrote this thing. I'm one of the main cats on this thing. Like
you were great on it.
Thank you. I was like, it's the revival. I was so excited to like, you know, that was my first thing that gave me some hope that I was like, people are going to see me. I wasn't just grinding doing stand up every night. This is a way for them to like maybe get my name on a little part of the map. Not blow up, but I just wanted and it didn't yield almost anything. I mean, internally in the business people saw it a little bit, but it was so non-factor that hurt my feelings a lot cuz I put so much fucking work into that show. And I wrote almost every other bit that I was in.
Really?
Yeah. I wrote most of the bits for myself and I was one of the writers, so I ended up helping to write all the bits that ended up on the air. But it was that hurt a lot. I spent a lot of my life in that room working on that show, grinding it out. And then when it didn't do anything, nothing happened. It was like the wind right out of my fucking sails. I was like, oh shit. It hurt because we put so much work into it. And then I thought, is this going to be the rest of time? Is this how it's going to be? Because it wasn't a failure, quote unquote, because that word is, it's ambiguous. What does that mean? What is a failure really? But it just didn't go the way that I want. So I felt like I failed. I felt like it was a failure. I was like, God damn, I can't believe this didn't work. I thought that was going to be a way to boost me. But you just learn in the business, it's not a failure. Nothing is really a failure. It's just, it didn't work out, you know, maybe the way you wanted. And then you try it again with something else and then that does a little bit better.
Hopefully you stick with it. Yeah.
Yeah, you
then
have
it just
to.
Becomes my last project.
Right.
That's all it becomes.
And I didn't want Punk to be my last fucking project.
No, I mean my previous project.
Yes,
my last and final.
It just becomes a thing you did. And I have a slew of things that I did that, you know, are just things you did. I did a fucking show for Yahoo with Malin Ackerman and Tom Arnold. It'd be a Yahoo sports show. You want to talk about a real failure. That bitch didn't go anywhere. No one even knows it exists.
I was going to say, I don't know.
Yeah.
I've ever heard that.
Malin Ackerman,
and
Tom Arnold.
And Malin came on Comedy Jam. That's where I met her.
She's a boss. I love her.
But I had no idea. Was that on TV or was it
Yahoo
digital?
Yahoo was going to create two first television shows. Paul Feig had a show called Outer Space. Mm-hmm. And ours was the other one. It's called Sin City Saints. It was about a basketball team in Vegas, which, by the way, I remember.
Yeah. Well, yeah. When I saw you in Austin, weren't you working with Baron Davis? Was that that
yes,
show?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. BD was on the show. And it was Rick Fox. We had a slew of great people that came through to like do cameos and guest stars and didn't matter, bro. Dan Bacadall, who's an incredible fucking actor, was on the show. Toby Huss, who is like one of the great. You know who Toby Huss is? This is how cool this dude is. He's done so much dope shit. Toby was, if you remember, in National Lampoon's Vegas Vacation.
Okay.
Do you remember when he buys the licensed Nick Papa Giorgio on the Strip?
Yes.
That was Toby Huss, the guy that was the Sinatra impersonator.
Oh, okay.
When he's like, the lights, kid, see your name in lights. And he gives him the fake license and he has to come back. So that's Toby Huss, that actor. He's fucking incredible. He was also, do you remember The Adventures of Pete and Pete? Do you remember that show? It was a Nickelodeon show. It was many, many moons ago. But he was Artie, the strongest man in the world. He was this incredible character, and you would never have guessed this is the dude. He changes shape, man. But the story that I think he told me was he was working Vegas and he was doing Sinatra impersonations, and they heard him and were like, "That's so good. We need you to do this thing." So he got that role, I think, through the Sinatra impersonations to do the licenses, underage light, whatever he was saying. It was so funny, man. He was so good. But that show was stacked with people. Yahoo came out with these two shows, did no fucking promotion. I mean, nothing, dude. We did promo in Austin at South by Southwest. Like, what the fuck? That's for the business. You know what I mean?
That's all that's for.
But we didn't do anything else. There was no TV ads. Like, where would they put them, I guess? But we were supposed to be on Yahoo as their first television show launch. And both of them, Paul Feig's show, No Love, our show, didn't fucking exist. I don't even know if you can find that shit anymore. But Marissa Mayer, who I think was the CEO of Yahoo at the time, she was banking on it. And I think they lost enough money that year that they just washed our shows. They didn't even try to like put them out for free. I mean, I put that shit on YouTube for free.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was a big fucking failure. And that one didn't hurt that bad because I didn't know if it was going to be anything. I was like, oh, this is just a fun show. I get to go shoot in Vegas. I lived in fucking Las Vegas. But
you did live there while you shot it?
I lived in Caesar's Palace, dog.
Oh, what's that like? It just sounds miserable.
It's a nightmare. Yeah. It's a gun in your mouth.
I fly in Friday. I'm getting the fuck out Sunday. That is more than enough.
So for me, now that I've spent all this time in Vegas, the only advantage is good food. I ate good food every night of my fucking life. You know what I mean? Every night of my life, I was like, all right,
isn't
I ate like a king.
Isn't that the like one of the best buffets in the world?
I think it's the highest rank. But I mean, Nobu was in the basement. Fucking Gordon Ramsay had a place. Like all of these dope restaurants. So we got to eat that every day. That was an advantage. And partying a few nights was fun. But living in there was, now that I go back, here's how I do it. I fly in.
Another terrible flight out of Burbank into Vegas.
Garbage. Yeah, that's death.
Oh, fuck, I can't stand.
I fly in early in the morning on like a Friday, party through the day, pool, then party all night, all into Saturday, and I leave Saturday afternoon. I don't ever stay another day. You don't need it. You don't want it. You don't need it.
That's like 36 hours. Yep. It's just enough.
You lost money. I promise you lost money.
You lost. That city's not built on winners.
I promise you lost money. The sign should say that. I promise you lost money on the way out. even when somebody's like, oh, no, man, I came. I'm up. I hate when guys say that. I'm up. You're not up.
Because it matters overall, by the way.
You're up right now.
Yeah.
I'm up $400.
Next year, you're going to fucking go back and lose $5,500. Yeah, Don't worry. At the dog track. Do they have a dog track in
Vegas? They should.
They should definitely have one. That's a degenerate fucking city. They got a hockey team,
and they're going to get a fucking football team. And that was back when we did that Yahoo Sports show. People were like, this fucking sports team in Vegas. It's a stupid concept. It's not going to happen. They used to mock us. They were like, that's such a dumb show idea. It's not going to happen.
They have a hockey team that goes to the Stanley Cup last year.
I know. It's unbelievable. I'm so mad at that shit.
You got the Raiders coming, in a year or two?
Well, that's not going to make a difference. You know, nothing's going to happen out there.
I don't know.
They gave up their greatest player to the Chicago Bears.
I think a lot of people from, like, L.A., fans from other teams now have a reason to go to Vegas. I think that's
another reason because they already love Vegas. People love Vegas.
Looks fucking sick.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But it's also like, it's just another reason for people to go there, spend more fucking money.
Yeah.
For Vegas, I can't believe they haven't had sports teams. Why wouldn't you after all these years? I mean, I know that I think the gaming restrictions were strict, but at some point they knew it's a market that has to exist. If you want more fucking people to go out to that goddamn desert, and no, I'm not shitting on Vegas, but good God, that fucking place. People are bringing their babies to the casino. I'm like, who are these animals? bringing their fucking 2-year-old
smoke
child.
Smoke all over the
yeah,
place
man.
And shit.
The fuck? Dude, the craziest shit, you see people's babies out at like 2, 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
Awake ass babies.
Rolling them through. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, look, the flamingo. Yeah. You're like, bet the fuck. Go home, dude. Get the fuck out of here.
It's a virgin hurricane. He's fucking sucking on one.
Should we take the baby back? Yeah, take the fucking baby back home.
Take the goddamn baby back.
So I've experienced it all, man. I've had a lot of good things happen in my life just as much as I've had ups and downs as far as this game goes. But like I said, maybe not failure. Failure as a word has a negative connotation. It just didn't work. You know, things just don't work sometimes. And you just have to fucking roll with that shit. You have to get over it.
Has there been anything in your life where it really almost broke you? Where, and I don't mean business. I mean just something where you're like, man, this is... been the hardest thing I've had to deal with or get over or
yeah I think like yeah I mean I've had a lot of different, I mean a lot of, like weird deaths, family deaths, people that have passed away that just, you know, you think you're maybe gonna lose your mind a little bit, or when it's all crumbling, when I was broke and not making any money and I was trying to get a new job and I was living on nothing. And living in a fuck, I was living in a divided off dining room. I mean, like, yeah,
here out here,
yeah,
yeah.
I was struggling, and I think those moments are when you're like, those almost broke me, because it just, you know,
How old were you when you moved here?
I moved here the 4th of July in 2006.
That was so weird. It's everybody. Mine was Valentine's Day when I got here.
Oh, really?
It was always a specific day.
Oh, I remember
it. Pulled in on Valentine's.
In fact, moving into our new house, I was going through old bins and I found the U-Haul receipt I kept from the 4th of July. I don't know. I'm usually not that guy.
Yeah.
Sentimental bullshit. No, but for some reason I must have kept it because it meant something. But I moved here on the 4th of July in 06 and I was 22 or 3. And I was living as, I don't know, man. I was living how I could live. I just had a couple of bucks. I was getting random pickup jobs here and there. I started to get worried. And then I finally landed another job that helped me out.
Prior to that, did you have the moment with yourself of what the fuck am I doing? Any crying, breakdown, emotional, like, I had, shit, it's real. I'm out here. I'm by my fucking self. And this is fucking hard.
I had nights in that old house, in that first house up in L.A. that like,
probably ruining that meal in that dining room. Those people trying to fuck.
The ghost of my cries. People can't even eat meals there now.
I just want another goddamn biscuit. Will you shut the fuck up? God damn, ruining my fucking meat, man.
Yeah, I had nights with my mattress on the floor. The old school days when the mattress was on the floor and I had a fucking like... $15 IKEA desk, and it was my mattress and my computer and a desk. That's all I had. But I had many nights in there where I would stay up at night worried that I wasn't going to make enough money to be able to stay out here. That was the hardest worry. That would break me down bad. I would get nervous because I never asked my parents for money. I never once asked for money, and I, you know, never did ever till this very day. I've never asked them. I never wanted to ask for money. So that was tough, man. I had a lot of nights where I was worried incessantly, like, how would I pay my cell phone bill? How would I pay for the rent plus this plus that? And then what would I have left over? And those nights are the fucking, those were the worst. I didn't have a ton of them. I'm lucky enough where I always got a couple of jobs to come through. When I mean jobs, I mean like random ass bullshit, production work or assistant work, or, you know, I would always have just enough to get through. But, you know, those are the days when you're living check to check and you got a couple of bucks left over in your bank account. And I was worried. I remember hearing Brett Ernst tell me that he had $5,000 in cash for an emergency at his house. And I thought, I was like, I'm gonna go rob Brett Ernst. I was like, you better have a new emergency plan because I'm gonna rob the fuck out of
you. You also better have more than $5,000 fucking dollars these days.
He was, well, this was 2007 or 2008 or something like that. But I remember him saying that at a stand-up show that we were getting paid $15 and you could get a free beer. And that was a big deal. Like back in the day, I mean, I remember being like, damn, dude, I'm fucking, it's heavy money. I'm getting fucking paid. But I remember him saying that. He was flirting with some girl or some shit and like joking around. He's like, you always got to keep some money. Santino, you got money in your house? And I was like, what? And he's like, you got a little bit like a side stash just in case? And I was like, what the fuck?
Side stash.
My stash is in my pocket right now.
That's all I have.
It's $100 in my pocket.
I used to have I'd have nightmares that I would move home.
Yeah.
because I couldn't afford it or save money. And then while I'm, so it would be this anxiety dream within an anxiety dream where I move home and then I can't get in Baltimore. I can't get up on a Monday. Yeah. I can't get up on a Wednesday, Thursday, you know what I mean? And go do shows. And now I'm saving money, but I'm not fucking doing what I want to do.
That is a nightmare.
I used to have that fucking nightmare all the time.
I think Burr has a quote online about that. Burr talked about, he's like, you know, sleeping on a futon isn't the worst thing in the world. You know, Burr was saying that, like, the worst thing in the world is like living a life that you don't want
to
live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sleeping next to someone you don't love.
Yeah. He's like, you know, comics that sleep on futons, you know, there's this weird connotation of like, you know, you're a poor comic. It's like that's the saddest thing in the world. Like, what a shitty life. But it's, if you're doing what you love, that can't be that fucking bad, because it could be way fucking worse.
In my 30s, I was still sleeping on a mattress on the floor. I didn't have a bed frame or anything.
Bed frame's real adult shit. That's adult shit, bro. I was a 2-box springs and a mattress make me feel like I was higher off the ground.
That's just all out the go so far. I want to be able to tie my shoes when I sit down on this fucking bed. It gets weird, too, when you're used to falling a little farther distance onto a mattress and box spring on the floor than when you can actually just sit on it. I felt good about myself when I could just sit on that motherfucker.
Look at me. Look at me all the way up here.
All the way up here on this pillow.
3.5 more feet off the ground. Yeah, mattress on the floor was forever for me. That was tucked right in the corner. I didn't even know. I just didn't understand. I thought buying a bed set was such an absurd thing to do.
Yeah, I thought it was like an old person
thing. Yeah, I was like, why the fuck would you need that?
Yeah.
The box spring is a box. It goes on the floor.
That's what the fuck it's for.
That's what it's for. Yeah. I couldn't wrap my head around that shit. Until finally you see the luxury of it and you're like, oh, I kind of like this shit. I don't buy this.
I don't know. I'm just a fan of the struggle. I'm a fan of the struggle.
Sure.
And that's the thing.
You don't want to have it right now, though.
I don't want to have it now.
You're too old for that.
But getting it, you appreciate it so much more when you get there. You appreciate, like, I mean, I slept on futons. I slept on people's couches. I lived in my car for a few weeks. Yep. I've slept in lazy boys. I lived in the basement of my grandmother's place. I hung my clothes up on the gas pipes. I remember my uncle one time going, I don't know if that's a good idea. And I was like, yeah, they are kind of hell. I didn't even think that it would pop the pipe right out of the fucking thing and kill everybody. I was like, I just need to place
I strung up
jacket.
Some stuff through the electrical, too. So we'll see if that works out, if this bitch burns to the ground.
Oh, shit. Well, yep,
the struggle is worth it in the end.
It is. And look at you now. You've got, I'm dying up here. What else do you have going on right now?
I'm shooting a show for FX that's going to come out in the fall. I start in August. It's me and Little Dickie, the rapper.
Oh, yeah. I saw you. You promoted that a while back, didn't you?
I just threw it online that we got picked up. And then my podcast, Whiskey Ginger, where people can go check all that shit out online. Go to Whiskey Ginger on all your platforms. And then I'm on the road. I'm touring a bunch. I'm doing some shows with Rogan, which is incredible. And then I'm touring on my own.
I saw the one you guys down in San Diego, that fucking arena.
13,000 humans.
That's got to be nuts.
Mind-boggling. At first, I thought I was going to be nervous. But then, honestly, it was the opposite. It was so invigorating. It was like the sound was so heavy. It was beautiful, man. I feel like I couldn't fail. Do you know what I mean? Like, you were like, this is so dope. All I have to do is do what I usually do, and I get this much response from this many people. A smaller room is way harder, I'll say that. Tiny rooms that would have gaps in them. You know, a 300-seater that's like half full.
Ooh. Yeah, and they're mixed all around. There's like a pocket of empty chairs right here.
You want to talk about hurt? You go watch a comedian hurt. Getting some laughs in those rooms.
Some, yeah.
No, that's
for an
hard.
Hour. Oh God, some laughs.
So when you do a 13,000 seater that are packed, that are comedy fans that want to be there, that are they respect Joe's vouching. It was the reception and the welcoming is amazing. And because of Rogan, I've increased people that know me through him. So now sometimes I do the shows and half of these motherfuckers know me, and it's great that you're
I love seeing it happen.
It's incredible, man. It feels so good.
You're
one of
the good ones. I've always liked you.
Thank you, dog.
A good fucking
ditto.
Dude. Yeah, I love seeing you. You have good energy. I get excited when you're around.
We're all trying, because at some point, we got to know we're in this boat. We're doing this fucking thing together. We were talking about that outside.
Yeah.
I think the more singular you are, the more alone you are. You're going to be at the top by yourself. It's going to be tough.
What's the point?
Well, you're going to be sad as fuck. Yeah. You can have it all. I mean, that's we know some of these guys. I'm not trying to.
I know, yes.
But we know these guys, that some guys that get up there and they're all alone, and it's weird. You almost feel bad for them. That's so funny to say. It's like they have all the things that they wanted, but nobody to have fun with, and nobody to really enjoy it but themselves. And that is some sad ass
shit.
That is some sad shit. Like, you want to be, Like, I got the biggest pool. It's like, no one's coming over to swim.
No one's swimming in the motherfucker. Dude,
that's a sad place to be.
That is a sad
Nobody
place
wants to fucking hang. I mean, and I've seen it a few times. I have some friends that have a lot of money. Or now I have people that aren't even my friends that are in our periphery that I'm just like, ooh, that's tough. I'd rather be with people.
I'd rather be
with some people that I think are cool, that are a part of the game. So I think we all keep helping each other and making this thing happen, and people keep going to live shows supporting other comics, it'll only get stronger, you know? We just have to cut out some of the negatives. You know, like Tom and Christina, they're bad people. I think we need to slice them out.
Fucking terrible.
They're bad people.
Yeah.
They're bad people.
They keep asking me to come on the show, and I'm like, guys, I'm not going to fucking do it. I'll be on your network, but I'm not going on
your fucking show. Yeah. You know that whole thing was a lie, that whole McDonald's thing? It was actually Arby's. That's why the colors are the colors.
Arby's threw their money up.
That, so they went to McDonald's.
Hardee's. Not even Carl's Jr. Hardee's.
But I appreciate the community. I appreciate all this, the fans, all the people that are listening, that are watching, that do their thing. We'll keep doing it if you keep fucking coming through, you know?
Well, I appreciate you coming on and opening up. I know it's not always easy. So thank you.
I hope my family doesn't see this. This will be terrible for me.
I don't know. We're big in prison, so your dad right
here. He's not in prison anymore,
well,
man.
We'll see. I got a feeling he's going back. will you one more time promote whatever you'd like again, please, your website?
Oh, yeah. Just go to AndrewSantino.com. This weekend, I'm in Bridgeport, Connecticut, baby. Stress Factory. Next weekend, I'm at the La Jolla Comedy Store. Cheeto Santino on Twitter and Instagram, and go listen to Whiskey Ginger on YouTube and all the podcast platforms. And people yelled at us for a while. They were like, it's not on this. I was like, it is. It's on all those. It's on all the shit. Like, people were yelling.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere, man.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, I promise you. People are like, I'm not on Apple. I don't have iPhones. Like, it's everywhere.
Then you can also go to, like, for my site, thehoneydewpodcast.com. You can go there and just stream it right from there if you can't find it anywhere
else. There you go.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, man.
I appreciate you coming on. I am Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. We'll talk to you all next week.